work 9 to 5 and 5 to 9. At 9:01, it's clubbing time. Haven't paid for a drink since 85. That's Perrier and French white wine. When I rock the mic, you best stay home with your Fisher Price and Mr. Microphone. You're coming through mono, I'm in stereo. Boy, don't you know this a one girl show? I only rock at night. Champagne and neon lights. I'll be your new heartache until the morning breaks.
Good morning. You're listening to WMFM Medford. My name is Charlie Driver. This is Pop and Circumstance. An exciting show for you today on this, the day before Halloween.
Spooky.
I'm here with producer Danny. And we've got some brand new vinyl from probably 1970.
Some brand new old vinyl for you.
Yeah. A Jonathan Winters comedy album. Some more... Watergate era comedy from your favorite Watergate era comedy themed radio show.
On and your only.
Probably the only one since Nixon resigned.
Yeah, and we've got some really interesting news for you. We're currently working on a new sticker, and we're going to be really happy to bring that to all of our Patreon subscribers really soon. Right, Charlie?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. We're going to start off with some music, though. This one is from the new Esperanza Spalding album.
Little wheels of golden ink, lifeblood of the streets starting today. Spread love in the community starting today. Spread some love and devotion.
grasp the umbilical cord that connects us to footsteps far ancient than we. An inner flame ignites, creating the flame that burns the illusion. Eyes aflame, only truth could rise from the ashes. Now memories will be reborn in dancing feet and love in the hearts of our children.
Thank you.
That was Blue Lab Beats. They're a London jazz ensemble, a jazz duo, actually. That's off their album,
just like us.
X-Over. Yeah, we're a London jazz duo. That song was called Tea. Before that, I had Joe Armin Jones, one of the members of the group Ezra Collective. We played their stuff in the past. Also, London jazz. That was Starting Today, featuring Ash Bear. That's off of an album that just came out last week. And another album that just recently released. We started that set and the show with Esperanza Spalding, 12 Little Spells. That's the title track of her newest album. And now, Danny, we're going to move over to some comedy from some jazz.
Lovely.
We have Whistle Stopping with Jonathan Winters, which I've looked up and is actually from, I think, 1966, because this photo on the cover, which is him standing on a train car with some signs surrounded him.
It's very patriotic.
Signs such as, I promise absolutely everything, join the war against puberty, vote for silence, or I pay for my votes. That was taken at the in a train car exhibited at the 1964-65 World's Fair in New York.
Was that the one with the big globe in Flushing?
Yep.
Lovely.
Whistle Stopping with Jonathan Winters, produced and directed by George Spoda. Winters continues to cast his verbal harpoons and shafts at the pompous and the powerful. In this, his seventh album for Verve Records, Jonathan Winter continues his search for the mood of our times by having his favorite characters observe and comment on the American scene. This album has a remarkable quality in the pungency of what it says, Danny, and I'm sure you'll find Jonathan's satirical comment confirmed by his ability to straddle both sides of any ticklish issue until it becomes hysterically funny. It was born out of a performance at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., before an audience of hundreds of America's finest newspapermen and women. You know it's early because it's newspapermen.
Also women. They're very inclusive.
Yeah, that's true. That's pretty good. They're probably all white, though.
I don't think they would have said newspaper persons. It just didn't have the same ring in 66.
So we're going to play at least the first side. We'll take a break after the first side and see if we're going to continue. We're going to listen to five characters. The extreme liberal, Lance Lovegaard. The American farmer, Elwood P. Suggins. The American housewife, Sally Sweetwater. The ultra-conservative, Mr. Tick Bitterford. And the American teenager, Melvin Gohard.
Should be a good time.
You're
we'll let you know.
This, Danny?
Yeah, we'll let you know after the fact how many words they played we couldn't say.
Yeah, hopefully none. All right. Here it is, Whistle Stopping with Jonathan Winters.
I'm speaking to you while walking alongside a parade. Next to me in the parade is Mr. Lance Lovegaard, a man who speaks for the extreme liberal point of view. Mr. Lovegaard, does this parade symbolize one of your liberal causes?
These, I think, are just a bunch of beautiful people trying to say something.
I see. Well,
it's just a lovely parade. That's all of folks.
Is there any purpose to the parade?
Not necessarily.
I see.
They're not troublemakers, I'll tell you that. They're just carrying the flag and banners and...
I understand.
Beating a drum and playing music.
I understand. I'll try and keep up with you as we walk along.
Okay.
We'd like to know, as an extreme liberal, what are your feelings about Medicare?
Well, I think any sick person's got to get help. And I think that whether they be old or middle-aged or young... If something's the matter with you, physically or mentally, you've got to get help. And I think that a lot of doctors have just shut their doors to folks. And a lot of them have gotten greedy.
Have you had trouble seeing a doctor, sir?
Oh, a number of them.
I see.
They just don't know how to take me. But that's beside the point.
Yes, well, let's get along to
I'm
one of our...
I'm speaking for everybody.
Well... We're talking to you particularly for the liberal point of view, and
yes.
We'd like to know how you feel about recognizing Red China.
I don't think you can miss it. My God, it's a big play. I always wanted to visit Shanghai and kind of skip through the streets and maybe ride in one of those little rickshaws, you know?
Yes, that's a lot of fun.
A copy of National Geographic and just hope for the best.
Sir, we'll move along to another political point here. How do you, as a liberal, feel about disarmament?
I don't see any real reason for arms. It just seems that the world is armed to the teeth.
What?
Everybody is just building, 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 building.
Don't get
and
too
they
excited.
Want to destroy. Well, I'm not kidding. You see it everywhere.
What about the national defense, space program, and things of that nature?
I think a lot can be done just by talking. And just sitting at a quiet table with a drink of your choice and...
You recommend this for our national defense, then?
For talking? Our defense, you silly savage.
Oh, I'm... Sorry, I don't mean
the
to be...
World, for the world.
Well, now... Do you feel that the Communist Party should be outlawed in this country?
No, but they've got to have tremendous revisions.
Such as?
Well, I mean, of course, I don't know. You have the Communist Party and the American Nazi Party, which they are always in front of some of the better movies. I've had a hell of a time trying to get into the theater. Then the Ku Klux Klan is a wild group. I don't know what they're doing in those crazy sheets. A lot of these groups have got to be looked into and
Mr. Lockhart,
put on a permanent playground of their own.
Would you mind my asking the people at home, of course, they can't see us, what is that step you're doing as we're walking along?
I'm just sort of tiptoeing.
What
Why,
is
are you making fun of it?
No, I certainly not, sir.
I bet you sense that I'm rather effeminate, don't
no,
you?
No, sir, I... Not at all.
I've got a hell of a tattoo on my right arm for World War II.
Well, you're quite well
okay,
built.
Okay, better believe it.
One last question, if I may. What would you say sums up your position as a liberal?
I think this. I would like to see just sort of the whole world in false faces.
In false faces?
In false faces, and sort of a tremendous Mardi Gras. So that it would sort of lighten the burden of reality.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Lowe.
Very few occupational groups swing more weight politically than the farmers. I am now standing in the barnyard of a typical farm for an on-the-spot interview with farmer Elwood P. Suggins. Here he comes now.
Howdy to you.
Oh, howdy, Farmer Suggins.
You like to run over my dog there in the road.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I...
Get off of him.
I'm terribly sorry.
That's right.
Speaking of animals, how many do you have on your farm?
We got about 127 Angus out there in that far pasture.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got about 2,000 chickens.
A fowl farmer, in other words.
That's one of them city funnies, ain't it?
I was so curious to know how long your family's been on this farm, sir.
Well, let's see. There's been about 3 generations of people, I guess, been on this farm.
Oh, that's very impressive.
My great-granddad come here. My granddad, my dad, and me have farmed this ground. We can't get a damn thing to grow. That's the reason we turned to fowl and chickens and ducks and cattle.
Mm.
We can't get anything to come up out of the ground. The government pays us $25,000 just to watch the ground and... Then we've got some guys, some young boys from the,
I believe that was one of them now.
That's my son there. Look at him over there. He'll run out of that little house pretty soon, watch. That's just him doing an impersonation of a cow.
I understand. Farmer Suggins, there have been rumors that a lot of you farmers are actually given money not to plant crops. Is that true?
That's very true. I think I made that abundantly clear to you. I've built my house. I've got a $200,000 home here. That was through the government, and we've got 2 cars, and my kid, my eldest boy, he's got a sports car. We've done all right in the swimming pool. I had a government man come out here the other day and told me that I couldn't grow cauliflower.
I beg your pardon, you couldn't
grow... I couldn't grow cauliflower. And he told me, he said, we don't want you to grow any cauliflower. So we went in there to Sears and Roebuck and went into a refrigerator and got some of them plastic cauliflowers. And we put them up there in the field, and 100 of them, just to bug him. I would like to farm every once in a while just for the hell of it. was a guest on the farm in Homar on local television, I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to talk about.
What do you store in those silos over there if you don't farm any crops?
Well, we just put them up for effect and got a lot of beer cans in that one. That other one, the kids just play in.
Oh, I hear the dinner bell, but Mr. Suggins, you as a farmer...
Yeah.
What are you personally looking for in a presidential candidate this year?
I'd like to see a man in there, preferably, that had some kind of farming background. Mm-hmm. And sometime during the election, if he just sat on a tractor, if he never did nothing else, just to sit on it and smile, hold a chicken under his right arm, pet a cow, do something. Something for us.
I see.
We've had an awful lot done for us, but a little something more for us.
In other words, you want an earthbound president.
Earthbound president that would okay more migratory workers.
This has been a very delightful interview, and I'm dying to try some of your farm food.
You could use a little honey or a little light. I hope I didn't offend you.
Oh, no.
I'll tell you something. I'd like to take you right up through that field of golden wheat. It really isn't wheat.
No?
It's a big sign with a picture of wheat on it and show you a little family of quail.
Oh, that's sweet.
And then we'll just huddle there together. Could you stay over maybe a couple of days? I've taken a strong liking to you. We could put you upstairs next to where my aunt stayed.
Well, thank you.
I promise not to come upstairs.
Thank you.
You've heard them farm stories, haven't you?
Of extreme importance to any presidential candidate who wants to win is what the American housewife is thinking. I'm standing in the kitchen of a typical American housewife we have selected at random, and we're going to ask her a few questions right now. What is your name, please, ma'am?
My name is Mrs. Sally Sweetwater, and I live at 2325 Elm Drive.
Just your name is enough. Thank you. What does your husband do for a living, Mrs. Sweetwater?
May I ask this first off? How did you get in my house?
Your teenage son let me in with no questions asked.
He would.
Now, may I ask you, Mrs. Sweetwater, you don't mind my being here, do you?
No, and not now.
What does your
Would
husband
you like
do?
To sit down near the knotty pine pillow with the Niagara Falls on it?
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Very comfortable. What does your husband do for a living, Mrs. Sweetwater? We just want that background.
He's a part-time insurance salesman.
And what does he do the rest of the time?
The Eagle Life Insurance Company.
And I see.
The rest of the time, he just thinks about work.
I see. Does he travel a lot? I notice he doesn't seem to...
I very rarely see him, but we get checks.
Well, now, to get down to what we're here for, Mrs. Sweetwater...
Yes, what are you here for?
We want you as a housewife to tell us answers to questions such as this. What do you look for in a presidential candidate?
What do I look for?
Yes, as a housewife.
Of all the people in this block, you came to me.
You were selected by...
I look for a beautiful man... Not only outside, but inside. Preferably married, has children. I think that's important. A single man in the White House, I feel uneasy. A God-fearing man.
God-fearing.
Not afraid of God, but if he does bad, God will get him.
God will get him.
Yes.
I see. Are there some other qualifications you'd like him to have?
I think, too, that he should... dress nicely and shake all the people's hands and I think too that his wife, I think that she carries a tremendous burden.
Yes, we'd be very interested to know what you would like her to be like.
Oh, I think that she should be, if possible, pretty and sort of pudgy, dumpy maybe. And I think that she should be able to smile night and day.
Any social graces you
Oh, I think that she should be able to, you know, organize dinners and tell jokes to foreigners.
And, tell jokes to foreigners?
Yes, I they
see.
Like that.
The dignitaries
sure.
from other countries.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And have an endless amount of children.
I see.
Just in bed a lot.
Well,
did that frighten you, that last statement?
Now, Mr. Sweetwater, we'd like to ask you as a housewife about some of the issues that will be discussed during the election year here. What do you think of Vietnam?
I just read Life magazine covers.
That's where you get your knowledge of politics?
That in itself is just a whole story.
Is that your teenage son?
Howard. We call him Howie.
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 Howie. Howie.
Got me doing it. When Howie grows up, would you like him to become president of the United States?
Of course I'd like it. But I don't think he stands a chance.
Why not?
You see, he plays a piano in a cat house.
I'm standing now in the hushed, hallowed halls of a very exclusive men's club. We are about to hear from a man who typifies a prominent segment of the political scene. The man with me is Mr. Tick Bitterford, who speaks for ultra-conservatism, a man who one newspaper characterizes being a little to the right of Louis XIV. How do you do, Mr. Bitterford? Shall we be seated, sir?
Welcome to the club. This is one of the oldest clubs, you know, in the city. Fred, you want to bring us a little gin and tonic? Would you care for a little touch?
No, thanks. Not while I'm working.
Forget it. Fred, bring two anyway for me.
Well, how do you feel about disarmament, Mr. Bitterford?
I think what we've got to do is go one way or another. Either arm ourselves to the teeth, or just get one great big bomb and hold it carefully.
And I see. What about the Navy? Should we have a Navy?
I think that most of our naval ships go into harbors all over the world, right?
That's right.
I think a thing that frightens a lot of foreigners are the guns on the ships. If we took those guns off and just sort of sailed in quietly.
Tore all the guns off the ship?
Took the guns off the ship. We'll have another gin and tonic.
What do you feel about taxes?
Well, I think that the people have been taxed to death. And taxes is a hard word in any presidential year. The thing is that income taxes, and we've got to make some major cuts there. I think that they've been taking the bite out of the big guy too much.
Uh-huh.
Guys like myself.
May I ask you a personal question, sir?
Of course.
How much are you worth?
About $16 million, I suppose.
$16 million?
With Standard Oil, New Jersey, hoping that stays as it is.
Would you be willing to give some of your possessions to poor people?
My God, I've given a lot to poor people already. How much more do you want me to
get? What did you give them?
Well, I gave them a recreational park, and we give to any number of organizations.
I see.
Most of them poor.
Well, I just heard that you...
I don't know of any organization that really isn't crying for money today. I mean...
Well, I heard that you played polo so much.
I do play polo, and we sent a number of my ponies to a depressed area the other day.
Sir, where did you go to school?
I was privately tutored. Until I was 30. Then I just stepped out and said, now I've got it.
I see. One final question.
Yes.
How would you sum up your political recommendations as a conservative?
I would say this. I think that every man, woman, and child should carry a 45 and a prayer book. Pray to God that we're doing the right thing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Pat McCormick speaking to you from the election headquarters of the Combined Radio Networks. This is the time of year when all Americans in all sections of the country are engaged in one of their favorite pastimes, campaigning and electioneering. Our reporters are standing by around the country to interview various Americans and get their point of view about how they feel about the issues and the principal candidates for the presidency of the United States. For our first interview, we take you to New York City.
Good afternoon. This is Alison Frobisch. In this election year, what is this next generation thinking? To find out, we're going to talk to Mr. Melvin Gohard. I am standing outside his high school, and Melvin is in front of me on his motorcycle. That's quite a motorcycle you have there, Melvin.
Thanks, baby. Man, you're something else. You're music. I dig older chicks, man. I got a thing about old chicks. Wow. I mean, these high school kids are a drag, you know. They're... Wow.
Now, while this isn't a political question, why do teenagers wear such tight pants?
Well, I'll tell you something, baby. Like, I got a great body. And, it's beautiful. Look at them pectoral muscles.
They're just lovely, huh? Melvin.
They bounce right out at you, don't they? I scared the principal. Snapped my fingers at him once, and he went, ooh.
As a typical angry young man, what are some of the things that you advocate for this country?
There's a lot of things, baby, that are bugging me.
Well, tell us.
I'm for free love, number one. I mean, it says that in a book, don't it? Love thy neighbor? Man, there's a chick next to me, 28 years old. She's too much. She digs me, I come over and cut the grass and just hang around and stare at her. If there's more love, then there wouldn't be this horrible war. If you just love people, love them. I mean, really love them. Kiss them, hug them, grapple with them, everything. But I'll tell you another thing I'm for is examinations. That's a problem with a lot of young people. We're under, you talk about pressure, man, adults. My old man comes home from the office, and always shaking up the old lady, saying, I'm under a lot of pressure. He forgets about me. I'm under a lot of pressure. It's from mental work, working in school, honey. Man, they're telling you, you gotta have grades, you gotta keep up, you gotta be good, you gotta be great. You gotta be this, you gotta excel, you gotta be a perfectionist, you gotta be first all the time. Now, if we had a little sedation, you know, to carry us through heavy examination periods, to give us a few tranquilizers to kind of let you say, yeah, I know that question. I have some other things I wanted to talk about. For instance, hair curlers for teenagers. Gotta be able to wear them in a funeral parlor. Or to stand up, man, in a convertible with nothing on, just facing the wind. Kind of just go through three or four lights saying, ah. Is that too much, baby?
No. I'm sure that all America's terribly interested in this.
They love me in a mobile station.
As a teenager, where, Melvin, are you headed?
Well, I'll tell you, baby. I hope you'll jump on the back of this grasshopper, because I'm going to cut in a few seconds, and a bunch of us are going to form a phony police escort. Okay?
That was side one of Whistle Stopping with Jonathan Winters. We're going to listen to a selection off of side two in just a moment. But first, Danny has a PSA for us.
Yeah. If you're interested in science and engineering lectures in the Boston area, there's one great website to keep you up to date, and that's BostonScienceLectures.com. Each week, journalist and author Fred Hapgood monitors more than 420, no coincidence there, different organizations in the Boston area and keeps you informed about interesting scientific, engineering, and other nerdy events. Most of them cost nothing to attend, and even some give away free food as a part of the event. Ah! So check out BostonScienceLectures.com. This public service message has been sponsored by your lecture-loving friends here at WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
And once again, you're listening to Pop and Circumstance, a.k.a. the Watergate Comedy Half Hour. What is the segment name for what we do?
I think Watergate Comedy Half Hour is accurate, because
it's usually about a half hour.
And he only lasted a full term and then a bit.
Yeah, that's true. This is a little early, obviously. Whistle Stopping with Jonathan Winters from like 1966 or something. We're going to listen to one track off of the second side of this record. As much as we would love to bring you the whole track, the whole side, we, one, don't have time, and two, I don't really want to play the American Indian track on the radio.
Yes, it's probably a little too...
Racist.
And by a little too racist, I mean blatantly racist. So we're just not going to play that.
We're going to play for you presidential nominee Daniel Douglas Diddle.
And hopefully he won't be racist.
I think he's an alcoholic, but I don't think he's racist.
Well, we'll see. We'll let you know if he's racist.
Again, this is Jonathan Winters playing the character of Daniel Douglas Diddle.
This is broadcast headquarters, and we now have word that the convention has selected their presidential nominee. The nominee is about to make his acceptance speech and will be introduced by the party chairman, so take it away, Convention Hall.
Ladies and gentlemen, occasionally in history a man comes along who is dedicated to the ideals of the human race. A man not only dedicated, but endowed with the gifts of statesmanship, a brilliant intellect, and the zeal for justice that gives man a new dimension of dignity. I give you such a man, the man our great party has chosen to be its standard bearer. The next president of the United States, Mr. Daniel Douglas Ditto!
I can't believe it. I just can't believe that you people nominated me for president. What did you have in mind? What were you doing? I wouldn't make a decent paperweight. Holy mackerel. Well, what can I tell you other than I have a prepared speech here?
Fellow Americans, we are engaged in a great war for peace. We are going forward with our banners unfurled, with our swords put away, but by the same token, at our side, or sides. I don't need this anymore. I'm speaking now directly from my heart. We have a fine country. Not only a fine country, but a fine bunch of folks. Sure, we've got problems, but we can solve those, can't we, gang? As you can well understand, in this political game, everybody must have a partner. I chose my partner in college. And here she is tonight.
This is so exciting, and particularly since we were this far away from getting a divorce.
Sorry you told him that, Puffy. Puffy and I were drinking while we were watching from our hotel room, weren't we, Pop?
Yeah.
Let's tell them. Let's level with them. We were gassed. Huh? Weren't we squeezing one another and kissing, cutting up?
I thought we
the
were...
The kids all there, boy, throwing stuff out of the windows. Let's level with them. Let's let them in on what we were doing. Not just sitting there dignified in a tuxedo. What the hell? How did we know in our wildest moments that we'd be Mr. and Mrs. President? Holy God. But here we are. And my old friend, Alan Gooleby, been my campaign manager. God bless you, Alan.
Thank you, Daniel. And you know, before I became your manager, I was a newspaper man.
Yes.
And I would be a little remiss if I didn't take advantage now to be the first man to interview you as the presidential candidate, you and the missus.
I wouldn't want it any other way.
Well, Deborah?
Call her Puffy.
Puffy,
yes,
are
do.
You concerned at all that there might be a war during your husband's 4 years?
Oh, not at all. No, actually, we don't believe in war of any kind because, let's face it, hostility is no longer chic.
I see. Well, now, how do you plan to help your husband during the campaign, Puffy?
Well, in every possible way I can, I am reminded of one of my favorite quotes.
Ah, bless you, Puffy.
Whither he goest, I will lead the way.
Thank you, Puffy. Tell us, Dan.
Her family has a fortune.
Dan, I don't like to throw you a curve here in front of the convention, but to get this nomination, did you Make a few enemies? Did you have to step on a few people then?
Almost a nation.
Well, Daniel Douglas Diddle, tell me, Dan, now that you're the nominee, you've been selected, the party has made their call, I suppose you're ready now to go out there and hit that long, tough campaign trail.
On the contrary. No, I'm going to level with you, and I'm going to level with the people. You remember that dinner back in Detroit?
Very successful. $200 a plate.
Well, we're going to take all that money and go on a world cruise.
That was the concluding track of Whistle Stopping with Jonathan Winters, presidential nominee Daniel Douglas Diddle. What do you think of that, Danny?
It was rather adequate.
Yeah, I think it had its moments. Could have been a little better. I liked the album a lot on the whole, though. I think it was fun.
Yeah, all in all, we missed a couple classic tracks. The American Labor Leader, Old Age Speaks Out.
Grand
the
Old
American
Man.
The American Indian and Grand Old Man. All of them classic figures of the American electorate that we really decided would be better not played.
We're going to have some other exciting stuff next week. We still have 9 minutes. We're going to play some tunes to close out the hour. But next week, we're going to be bringing you some Jonathan Fry, start of a 2-week engagement.
Some David
with,
Fry.
Excuse me, David Fry. I'm getting confused. We're going to start a 2-week engagement with David Fry, bringing you I Am the President next week. And the week after that, we're going to play for you Radio Free Nixon, which ends with the reason you should tune into both weeks is at the end of Radio Free Nixon, you'll hear David Fry as Richard Nixon singing Frank Sinatra's song, My Way.
It should be a wonderful time, but that's 2 weeks away,
that's
and
two
here
weeks.
We are today with some tunes. Charlie, what's up next?
I have no idea.
Yeah. If anyone who has any recommendations, please call in. Our number is, as always, 855-915-WMFO. That's 855-915-9636.
In the meantime, I do have some tunes in the end. This is a demo version of Our House.
Light the fire. You place the flowers in the vase that you bought today. Staring at the fire for hours and hours while I listen.
the streets of London, panic on the streets of Birmingham. I wonder to myself, could life ever be sane again? On the Leadside streets that just slipped down, I wonder to myself. Hopes may rise on the grass mere, but honey pie, you're not safe here. So you run down to the safety of the town, but there's panic on the streets of Carlisle, Portland, Dundee and Humberside. I wonder to myself. DJ, because the music that they constantly play, it says nothing to me about my life. Hang the blessed DJ, because the music that they constantly play, on the Leadside streets that you slip down, provincial towns that you jog round. Hang the DJ, hang the DJ, hang the DJ. Hang the DJ, hang the DJ, hang the DJ. Hang the DJ, hang the DJ, hang the DJ. Hang the DJ, hang the DJ. Hang the DJ, hang the DJ. Hang the DJ, hang the DJ, hang the DJ. Hang the DJ, hang the DJ. Hang the DJ, hang the DJ. Hang the DJ, hang the DJ, hang the DJ. Hang the DJ, hang the DJ. Hang the DJ, hang the DJ. Hang the DJ, hang the DJ, hang the DJ. Hang the DJ, hang the DJ.
That was a Smith's cover. A Smith's cover by The Shins from their Spotify singles. That was Panic. Yeah. All right, I've just brought us back on, Denny, so we can close out, because it's 7:57 and 34 seconds here on WMFO in Medford, 91.5 FM.
Tufts Educational Radio.
Featuring the sounds of Watergate and pre-Watergate comedy.
Yes, really anything between the years of 1960 and 1979.
Yeah, some period like that. We're going to be back again next week with David Fry. I am the president. For now, we're going to close this out with a song by Nicole Atkins off of her album, Goodnight Rhonda Lee. This is A Little Crazy. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Just for you, what else can I do?